Talk Cheese.
Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James, along with Pastor William Fink. We are continuing our series on the book of Ezekiel. And last week we finished up with Ezekiel chapter 33. And I would have to say that in general, so far, the first 33 chapters of Ezekiel have been judgment upon this nation and that nation and the other nation, and very, very much for all of their crimes and sins against Yahweh, and you know, very specific punishments for very specific nations. Wouldn't that be a good summary, Bill, for these first 33 chapters?
Well, the way I looked at it was in the past few chapters, you know, in the past many chapters, we've seen prophecies concerning what basically amounts to the coming demise of the entire old Adamic oikoumene,
mm-hmm.
Mesopotamia and Egypt and northern Africa, right?
Yes.
And what we saw, the destruction of foretold of Jerusalem and Tyre and Egypt, and things which Ezekiel had actually written about at the very end of his prophesying, and the scrolls were mixed up at one point. But there's a lot of very important things going on here, because this is the oikoumene. I mean, we don't see it, but from 1,000 years before the time of Abraham up to this time, a period of about 3,000 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
We Mesopotamia and Egypt are the center of white civilization.
Right.
And Greece and Italy are far distant frontiers,
right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Greece and Italy at this time are what California was to an Englishman in 1830.
Right.
Or 1840. They were far off, distant places.
That, mm-hmm.
You know, with very few white people in them.
Right.
But, so we see basically the forthcoming destruction of the entire Adamic oikoumene. And, you know, there's something going on here that I think we should take note of, because it's very important. And Ezekiel's prophecies concerning the demise of Egypt, especially,
mm-hmm.
and it's overlooked by nearly everybody who's ever read the Bible.
Okay.
And let's take, for instance, Ezekiel chapter 32, where it says, 32:4, where it says, "Then will I leave thee upon the land. I will cast thee forth upon the open field, and will cause all the fowls of heaven to remain upon thee,
mm-hmm.
and I will fill the beasts of the whole earth with thee." And to me, anyone with any sense reading the prophecies concerning Egypt and Assyria, that they have to admit that the people who currently inhabit those places,
mm-hmm.
cannot now be Egyptians, but rather they must be those metaphoric fowls of heaven,
right.
and beasts of the whole earth, since the original Egyptians were white.
That's right.
And what makes us think that we should have anything to do with the fowls of heaven and the beasts of the whole earth?
Right.
That there's no room for those people in the gospel. They're the fowls of heaven.
Right. And they always flock to our nations anyhow. We never flock to theirs. Right.
Now we see this, you know, we see this metaphor used quite often in Scripture, where the various white nations are going to be sodden or trampled down by the fowls of heaven and the beasts of the whole earth. And they're definitely metaphors for the non-white races.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's very interesting that these are common metaphors concerning the non-white races. The fowls of heaven, to me, represent the fallen angels,
mm-hmm.
and the beasts of the whole earth represent where Enoch explains that they went out and mixed their seed with every kind, with
right.
every species.
Good.
That's the origin of the other races. And
mm-hmm.
it might sound fantastic, but I believe that the fall of the fallen angels was caused because of some kind of mixing of kind with kind. I don't care if you want to think of it sexually, if you want to think of it as having happened in a laboratory or by any other means, that to me, that's what caused their fall.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then our people are always described as being a tree, and then the fowl, the F-O-W-L, and other birds. The birds and fowl are usually considered unclean. So that those animals are ones that rest in our branches. Okay.
Right. That was another thing in the past few chapters the phrase the Garden of God and the word Eden are metaphors which are used to describe wherever the Adamic race is planted at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
And all throughout, Ezekiel chapter 28, Ezekiel chapter 31, that the Adamic Genesis 10 nations of men are described as trees in that garden.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Anything else in terms of review up through chapter 33?
Well, no, but just a little introduction for 34, just a paragraph. Here in Ezekiel, it's one of my favorite chapters in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
We see the Bible itself defines the phrase, which is rendered in the New Testament as lost sheep.
Right.
And that phrase can actually be demonstrated from the Greek that Christ used to mean driven off sheep. And the phrase is used only of the literal children of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And since no other people were ever driven off from Yahweh's sight, that then no other people except the literal and genetic children of Israel can ever claim to have been lost.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore,
right,
the new covenant, as we shall see later in this chapter, can only apply to genetic and literal Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible itself consistently refutes the so-called replacement theology, which I've decided that replacement theology is really a replacement of Christianity with some false god, namely
right,
the Jews.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, shall we go into chapter 34?
Be my guest.
Okay, verse 1. And the word of Yahweh came to me, Ezekiel, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel, prophesy and say to them, Thus says Yahweh Elohim to the shepherds, of course we're talking about the false priests here, Woe be to the shepherds of Israel that do feed themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flocks? Okay, so what we're talking about is the priests who take advantage of the people, of the Israelite people. Of course, they're in modern day Judeo Christianity, we have probably, I'd say maybe 9-to-1 liners, priests who line their pockets as opposed to actually feeding the sheep.
Well, right, but we have to bear in mind also, even a step further than that, right? I mean, that's a good analogy. However, it's not only shepherds at this time were not merely 1 hour a week religious leaders.
Right.
The political and the ecclesiastical leaders were seen as one at this time.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah, and whether they were Levitical priests or, actually the priesthood of the order of Melchizedek, as far as I can tell, it never went away. I think the eldest son of every household would be in line for the priesthood of the order of Melchizedek.
Well, that's the pattern we should pursue.
Yeah, that's
but,
right.
But it has to be based on righteousness and not on our own will.
Right, right. But here we're talking about priests who definitely are exploiting the people, and that's what we're talking about here, okay? Verse 3, you eat the fat, and you clothe you with the wool. You kill them that are fed, but you feed not the flock. Verse 4, the diseased have you not strengthened, neither have you healed that which was sick, neither have you bound up that which was broken, neither have you brought again that which was driven away, neither have you sought that which was lost, but with the force and cruelty have you ruled them. Of course, this is what Yahshua Messiah did when he came. He started to do all these things which these false shepherds have been ignoring. Verse 5, and they were scattered because there is no shepherd. And they became meat to all beasts of the field. Wow, that's happening today, folks.
Well, that's it. That's exactly my note. Exactly as it is today. That's what my note says.
Right, right.
There is no doubt that
mm-hmm.
that's exactly what the pattern. Well, we follow the same patterns in history because we allow the same forces to subvert and pervert our society.
Right. The perfidious Jew has taken over the minds of all Judeo-Christians, and their pastors are feeding the Christian sheeple to the Zionist wolves. That's what's happening, folks. Let me read verse 5 again. And they were scattered because there is no shepherd, or there's only Judeo-Christian shepherds who might as well, you might as well have the devil himself in the pulpit. And they became meat to all of the beasts of the field, that is all the non-whites, when they were scattered. Verse 6, my sheep wandered through all the mountains and upon every high hill. Yea, my flock was scattered upon all the face of the earth, and none did search or seek after them.
And let me say that today, the only people even attempting to search or seek after the flock are those in Israel Identity.
That's right. That's right. All the other denominations totally ignore white people.
Well, the political and the ecclesiastical leaders of our people, mm-hmm. who are the shepherds being addressed here, that they're only seeking after the dollars and the votes of the goats and the wolves.
Right. Yeah, and putting more butts in the pews. Doesn't matter whether they're Israelites or not, as long as it's more butts in the pews, okay? That's what's going on in modern Judeo-Christianity. Verse 7, therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. As I live, says Yahweh Elohim, surely because my flock became a prey, and because these pastors have made the flock a prey, and my flock became meat to every beast of the field.
Now let's look in history.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Did lions and tigers come in and devour the Israelites? No. People took them away.
That's right.
The non-Israelite peoples, both Adamic and non-Adamic, came and made them a prey and took them away.
Right.
So if it's talking about people then, it's talking about people now.
Right.
It's not talking about lions and tigers. And we'll see before we're done here that this prophecy surely has an application today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because as we found in several of the previous chapters, whatever race of non-Israelites that we bring into our nations, Yahweh will use those people to punish us.
All the time.
Yes.
Because we accept them into our nation.
Yes.
But we shouldn't accept them into our company, period.
That's right. We shouldn't. Okay, verse 8. Let me start from the top. As I live, says Yahweh Elohim, surely because my flock became a prey and my flock became meat to every beast of the field, because there was no shepherd, neither did my shepherd search for my flock, but the shepherds fed themselves and fed not my flock. But it's even worse than that.
Well, they're feeding off the flock.
They're feeding off our little boys. Right? It's horrible.
They're feeding off our little boys and they're feeding our little girls to the lions and the tigers.
That's right. That's right. Okay, verse 9. Therefore, O you shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. Thus saith Yahweh, behold, I am against the shepherds, and I will require my flock at their hand, and cause them to cease from feeding the flock. Neither shall the shepherds feed themselves any more, for I will deliver my flock from their mouth, that they may not be meat for them. Now, of course, this hasn't happened yet because we've had false priests for the last, 7,000 years?
Well, right. Yeah, you know, because it's our political and ecclesiastical leaders have caused us to get into this mess. And Yahweh saying that ultimately they will be punished for it.
They live
high on a hog now, but tomorrow they'll be tried by the
swine. The day of judgment will settle this score. Verse 11, for thus says Yahweh, behold, I will both search my sheep and seek them out.
Let me quote Matthew 15:24. But he answered and said, I am not sent unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and say that what sort of mental disorder leads one to think that the lost sheep which Yahshua came for are anything but the genetic children of Israel, as Yahshua himself here professed, or Yahweh himself here professed, that he would seek out. Who has Yahshua come to seek out?
Mm-hmm.
That these same people that were driven off and taken away by the Assyrians and the Babylonians.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It can't be any, but the Bible is one book. It can't be any different.
Mm-hmm.
It's sheer delusion to imagine that Yahshua Christ came for anything else except these same people.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And there's nothing in the New Testament to change the covenants from one group of people to another.
Well, no, there's a promise of making the covenant right here in Isaiah 34. There's a promise of a new covenant.
Okay. All right, well, verse 12, as a shepherd seeks out his flock in the day that he is among his sheep that are scattered, so will I seek out my sheep and will deliver them out of all places where they have been scattered in the cloudy and dark day. Okay, it's going to get a lot darker yet, folks.
Now, this I is Yahshua Christ.
Mm-hmm.
When he returns, he will seek out only the lost sheep of the house of Israel, the Anglo-Saxon Celtic people that are left in the world.
Right, right. And somewhere in Isaiah it says, I will seek out my flock one by one. So there's not going to be a mass conversion. It's going to be a steady trickle, right, of Israelites coming back into the fold. Verse 13, and I will bring them out from the people and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them to their own land and feed them upon the mountains of Israel by the rivers and in all the inhabited places of the country. So, I mean, he's going to seek us out.
Well, right. I think we have a gradual fulfillment of this, but it's still to culminate.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Verse 14, I will feed them in a good pasture, and upon the high mountains of Israel shall their fold be. There shall they lie in a good fold, and in a fat pasture shall they feed upon the mountains of Israel. Now, this sounds like America to me.
Well, right, and that's what I talk about, the gradual fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still to culminate upon the return of Christ.
Right, right, yeah, the culmination of all this. And but, of course, Deuteronomy chapter 28 says that we will one more time be slaves. We will have to endure slavery one more time, and that's what we're experiencing right now. Verse 16, I will seek that which was lost, and bring again that which was driven away. Now, do you this word lost here, do you have the Greek Septuagint? Is this also apolumi?
Well, in the Septuagint, I would like to see.
Apolumi would be put away in punishment, and the best one-word translation of that would be exiled.
Well, yes, it's actually quoted. There's a passage, that there are several passages in secular writers quoted by Liddell and Scott that explain, without any connection to any biblical passage whatsoever, that explained that the word apolumi was written of people, was used to describe a people driven off from their homeland.
Uh-huh, okay.
And so, that's right in Liddell and Scott's Greek-English lexicon.
So it can't be any other people than the Israelites, because only Israelites were put away in punishment. Okay, so even here in chapter 34, verse 16, Ezekiel verifies that we're talking strictly about the Israelites and no one else.
Well, right, and the Septuagint does have a form of apolumi. It's apololos, okay. but it's a form of apolumi.
Okay, very good.
I'd like to quote Matthew 18:11 here, for the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost,
those
people who were driven away.
That's right.
That's who he came for.
That's
he
right.
He didn't come for anybody else, and he had to have this very chapter of Ezekiel on his mind every time he talked about the lost sheep.
Right, right. And a one-word translation that I feel is best is the word exiled, because our people were exiled out of Palestine, okay?
And, right, but this next phrase, you know, I will seek that which was lost, defines that for you, and bring again that which was driven away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that only describes Israel. It doesn't describe any other nation. No other nation was driven away by Yahweh from himself.
Well, right, so we can't imagine the Chinamen, Negroes, Indians,
right,
or Mexicans, or Eskimos,
yeah,
or anybody else can possibly fit into the biblical picture.
Right.
There's no mention of these people in the Old Testament prophets. There's no mention of them in connection with Yahweh, with covenants, or with prophecy, period.
Right. And when the Great Commission, when Yahshua gave the apostles the Great Commission, he said, seek the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Okay?
Well, right, and they like to point to that last chapter of Matthew where he says, go out to all nations.
Right,
but you
know, that's where they are.
Right, there's an article missing there, go out to all of the nations.
Uh-huh.
And he means particular nations.
Right.
The other races of people, that they are never properly organized into nations or tribes. They have very little sense of nationhood. And basically, they still don't really have any sense of nationhood.
Sure. Well, I mean, they have, at best, they've had monarchies. You know, the Mongolians would be, you know, the highest example of that. But certainly never representative government. That's only white people that have ever had that. Okay, continuing with verse 16, take it from the top. I will see that which was lost. I will seek, rather, that which was lost, and bring again that which was driven away. Okay, we're talking apolumi here, folks, exiles, and will bind up that which was broken and will strengthen that which was sick, but I will destroy the fat and the strong. I will feed them with judgment. In other words, these shepherds, and this would include the Levitical priests who took it upon themselves to feed themselves off the sheep. Okay.
Well, right, and I think that a lot of that, the priesthood was infiltrated even in these days.
Right.
And that's, we have evidence of that in 1 Chronicles, where it says that the Kenites are the other scribes.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're already the scribes, well, it's not a big stretch to get into the priesthood, right?
Right, exactly. Well, that's what they've been finagling to do ever since Herod took over. Okay.
Well, the scribes, that function was supposed to belong to the Levites.
That's right. That's right. But the Edomite Jews took it over, especially under Herod. Verse 17, and as for you, O my flock, thus says Elohim, Yahweh Elohim, behold, I judge between cattle and cattle, between the rams and the he-goats.
And I'd like to not skip over this too quickly, because that's Matthew 25, 31 to 33.
Right.
But when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, mm-hmm. then he shall sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations.
Right.
And that word is ethnos. It has to mean nations.
Right.
And he shall, or
does not mean believers.
Right, exactly. He shall separate them one from another, and
mm-hmm.
the shepherd divides his sheep from the goats.
That's right.
Now a shepherd doesn't ask a goat, if you think you're a sheep, go
yeah,
to the right.
Right.
We don't see that happening.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and
the shepherd can tell the difference between a sheep and a goat.
Well, right. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand
mm-hmm.
and the goat on his left.
Right.
And you know, this is too easy.
That's right.
And the mainstream sect simply refuses.
Hey, Bill, this is talking about literal sheep and literal goats, right?
Well, right. They refuse to put this together.
Right.
In the eyes of Yahweh, there's only two races of people in the
mm-hmm.
world,
yeah.
sheep and goats.
Yeah,
and
Adamites
and
not Adamites.
Believers and non-believers, then such language as cattle and nations
mm-hmm.
would never have been used.
Right.
Every indication, and there's a little cloud over this, as I'll explain in a couple of verses, but every indication exists that this entire struggle is solely genetic.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Very good. Okay, verse 18. See, these first two words are added by the KJV, seems it. Let me just translate it this way. Is it a small thing to you to have eaten up the good pasture, but you must tread down with your feet the residue of your pastures, and to have drunk of the deep waters, but you must foul the residue with your feet? So again, we're talking about these false priests. Fouling up the pasture.
Well, right, because how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the gospel of truth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Verse 19, and as for my flock, they eat that which you have trodden with your feet, and they drink that which you have fouled with your feet. Okay, so in other words, garbage in, garbage out, right? If the pastors are feeding the flock with false doctrine, garbage doctrine, then their minds are full of that garbage. And that's why we have Judeo-Christianity today. Verse 20, therefore thus says Yahweh Elohim to them, behold, I, even I, will judge between the fat cattle and between the lean cattle.
Now this distinction of fat and lean cattle, it may seem to cast a doubt upon my statements here that this is genetic, but I would like to say this. Who are our shepherds?
Mm-hmm.
Who are the ecclesiastical and political leaders that we have basically subjected ourselves to? All of these people, Billy Graham, Benny Hinn, Barack Obama, Charles Schumer, Dianne Feinstein, Rahm Emanuel, David Axelrod, how did they come to power?
Right.
They're not, they're shepherds, that they're the political and ecclesiastical leaders we're stuck with.
Mm-hmm.
They're not sheep.
Yeah.
They didn't come up through the ranks. That they came in through the back door.
Right, right. Well, I seem to sense here, too, if the house of Israel is the sheep, could cattle be the non-Israelite whites as well? Because we certainly have a lot of false priests among them, no doubt. And we have false priests among our own people. So, you know, cattle might not mean simply some other race, but the non-Israelite whites, okay? Anyway,
I think that, you know, bad fruit doesn't really come from a good tree.
Right.
People are taken off on the wrong path by the enemy,
mm-hmm.
but usually they're taken off by the enemy.
Right. Okay, so, but some of our people could become cattle.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
By mixing with these wrong people, right?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. But
okay.
For the most part, when our nation goes corrupt, it's because we have corrupt leaders.
That's right.
100 years ago, we
right.
had a great nation, and we had white leaders.
Yeah.
And today, we have a corrupt nation, and look at our leaders.
That's right.
Look at who the shepherds are.
Yeah, the vast majority of them are Judeos, and some of them are Jews.
well, they're all Jews. I mean, we have... That they're all Jews or totally entranced
or
by the
or
Jews. Goy,
yeah, or Chavez Goyim. Right.
Teddy Kennedys and people
mm-hmm.
like that.
Right. Okay, our verse 21. Because you have thrust with side and with shoulder and pushed all the diseased with your horns till you have scattered them abroad. Okay, so somebody, and obviously when the Edomites invented Judeo-Christianity, and they financed the Scofield Reference Bible. What they did was they started scattering our flock. I mean,
right, and I believe they were responsible for the Bollinger too. But
right.
But that's you know the conspiracy against Christian America started probably when Andrew Jackson stood up to them
mm-hmm.
and threw them out of the Treasury. And I believe that that's when they began to conspire against us.
Right. They actually precipitated the Civil War.
Well, right.
By financing both sides. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Okay, so verse 22, therefore will I save my flock. I will do this. I, Yahweh, will save my flock. And they shall no more be a prey, and I will judge between cattle and cattle. Now, it's obvious that the except for Christian identity, none of these shepherds is doing anything to save the flock, to regather the flock. They're not doing anything. They're helping to scatter the flock. Verse 23, and I will set up one shepherd over them, and he shall feed them, even my servant David. And, of course, Yahshua is the root and the offspring of David.
Well, right, and this has to be a direct reference to Yahshua Christ himself.
That's right.
Well, which is another proof that the Jews can't be his people.
That's right.
Because they have never esteemed him as a shepherd.
That's right.
And the mainstream sects, basically, they deny the very Bible they claim to embrace.
That's right. They sure do. He shall feed them, and he shall be their shepherd. And what did he say? My sheep hear my voice. The Jews don't hear his voice. Verse 24, and I, Yahweh, will be their God, and my servant David, a prince among them, and I, Yahweh, have spoken it.
And I would say that Yahweh is both God and prince.
Yes.
He's the son as a man, and Yahweh the father as our God. And that's something that that we have to come to grips with, that Yahweh is our king
mm-hmm.
and will always be. And that's what this is all about, even if he had to come in the form of a man to eventually assert his rule and authority.
Okay, very good. Verse 25, and I will make with them a covenant of peace and will cause the evil beasts to cease out of the land.
Well, when we follow the will of our God, the evil beasts,
right.
The Negroes and the Mexicans and the Jews, they have to up and leave.
That's right.
And because we refuse to follow the will of our God and seek his true word and understand it, then look at the calamity that our nation is suffering.
Right. Well, no cesspool, no pigs, right? We make the environment for the parasites to feed off of us by disobeying.
And if we would follow the shepherd, he would remove these beasts from our presence.
That's right.
That's what
that's
this
right.
is saying. It's plain and simple.
Right.
If we are obedient, we have no, the other races won't bother us.
Mm-hmm. And they, being us, shall dwell safely in the wilderness and sleep in the woods. Verse 26, and I will make them and the places round about my hill a blessing, and I will cause the shower to come down in its season. There shall be showers of blessing. Now, I would have to say that America in its first 100 years was this very kingdom of peace.
Well, they were a church-going moral people.
That's right.
And I don't mean that we should get up and go to church Sunday, believe me. But at that time that they preached that gospel of fire and brimstone, right. and people, yes. it kept a moral rule
right.
for the people. And,
right.
and that's if that's what it takes to keep the people in line
right.
and not get, you know, home having orgies, watching porno and things like that. Well, that's what it takes.
Yeah.
And that fire and brimstone preaching of the 1700s and 1800s, it kept people in check.
Yeah.
And we were, under those moral guidelines, we were as overbearing as they might seem even to the most conservative of us today.
Yeah.
But we were a successful and flourishing people.
That's right.
At that
That's
time.
Right. Yeah, and even as late as the 1950s, I would describe America as being very law-abiding in terms of abiding by Yahweh's laws.
Well, okay? The Jews moved into this land in the 1880s and 1890s and set up all their little idols,
mm-hmm.
and it took us 50, 60 years to succumb to them, right?
Right. Constant propaganda, absolutely, yes. Verse 27, and the tree of the field shall yield her fruit, and the earth shall yield her increase, and they shall be safe in their land, and shall know that I am Yahweh, when I have broken the bands of their yoke, and delivered them out of the hand of those that serve themselves of them. Who is taking advantage of us?
Well, right. This is speaking of both us today,
mm-hmm.
and we will be delivered from these Jews and this international banking system, just as our ancient ancestors were delivered from the yoke of the Assyrians and the Babylonians.
That's right. That's right. Verse 28, and they shall no more be a prey to the heathen, neither shall the beast of the land devour them, but they shall dwell safely, and none shall make them afraid. Now, what's the condition? That we obey his laws, that we return to being a moral people. Our morality creates our prosperity. When we fail to be moral, we become sick. We become a sick society. It's really very simple. But we have all these people, all these false shepherds teaching that the law has been done away with, and then even worse, that they bring in Wicca, they bring in homosexuality, they bring in feminism, they bring in everything under the sun, voodoo.
Well, right, and
you
we
name
let
it.
This into our living rooms.
That's right.
We have financed it. We've gone to their movies for 80 years now. We've given them money to go to these distractions.
Right.
The movies, the sports. They have elevated immorality. They've elevated the other races,
mm-hmm.
and we
race mixing. Yes,
and we pay for it. And
right.
we're
through advertising,
forking the money over to them.
Right.
You know, these ministers on Sunday, they teach you to accept homosexuals and other deviants, and people sit in the pews,
yes.
and keep handing their money over to these people. Well, they deserve to be punished.
Yes.
Even if
yes.
you're not committing the error on your own part, you're financing those who do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
And you deserve to be punished.
Right, right. But, of course, you know, our current religio-political system is all based on race mixing, that anybody who's a racist is evil. And in order to qualify as a good person in this system, all you have to be is an anti-racist. And you get your ticket to paradise, right?
Well, right.
That's the current morality.
People have accepted that and have propagated it and mm-hmm. enabled it, rather than having mm-hmm. turned to the Word of God, seeing that He is, even if you're the most brainwashed Judeo, you can't read the Bible and not realize that Yahweh is the author of race.
Mm-hmm.
And that He... if you want to read Paul in Acts 17, states very succinctly that God created the times and the boundaries between the nations.
Right.
So if he created boundaries between the nations, if he's the author of race, and if his law is kind after kind, then even you don't have to be a racist to wish to preserve it.
That's right.
To preserve his creation.
Mm-hmm.
Racism is the will to preserve the creation of God.
Yes.
And anti-racism is the endeavor to destroy the creation of God, and that has been the Satan's purpose from
right.
the beginning.
And his strategy, yeah, from Genesis 3:15 to the current out-picturing of all the Eves running around trying to find non-white men, right, to team up with. And unfortunately, the propaganda is so fast and furious, just about every TV ad and magazine cover features a black man and a white woman. In other words, Wall Street and Hollywood are determining the morality of America.
And we have financed Wall Street
That's
and
right.
Hollywood.
That's
Wall
right.
Street's immoral, and we have IRAs.
Mm-hmm.
We've enabled Wall Street.
That's right.
Hollywood's immoral, and we go to movies and rent DVDs.
That's
We've
right.
enabled Hollywood.
That's right.
Don't tell me that we don't deserve to be punished as a nation.
That's right. We will be. We're just seeing the beginning, folks.
Your local Baptist minister has been up there preaching on behalf of Wall Street and Hollywood, and we continue
yeah.
to enable him.
That's right. That's right. Verse 29, and I will raise up for them a plant of renown, and they shall be no more consumed with hunger in the land, neither bear the shame of the heathen anymore. Well, what's this plant of renown? It's got to be Christian identity, folks. We're the only ones promoting the true Israel message. Verse 30, thus shall they know that I, Yahweh, their God, am with them, and that they, even the house of Israel, are my people. Can that be any clearer? Only the Israelites are my people, saith Yahweh Elohim. Verse 31, and you, my flock, the flock of my pasture, are men, and I am your God. Did you have a chance to check out this word men, if it's translated from Adam, from Adam?
Well, I'm sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
I could check it in a minute, but I read this to mean that this is why, yes, it is Adam.
Okay.
And this is why we can't deliver ourselves out of the situation that we're in.
Right.
But because if we did, we would think haughtily of ourselves
right.
and not acknowledge the sovereignty of
right.
God.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and typically, whenever our people become too prosperous, we do become haughty, and we pat ourselves on the back for being intelligent and prosperous, when, of course, only Yahweh is the author of all prosperity, and only to the extent that he allows us to be prosperous are we prosperous. So when we start partaking of that prosperity, we tend to forget Yahweh and become very shallow, callous, and what's the word? Haughty is a good word, but it's self-centered, self-righteous.
That's arrogance. That's what arrogance is.
Yes. Okay, chapter.
Well, before we start 35, I'm sorry I keep cutting you off.
Yeah.
I have a proposition to make.
Okay.
Concerning 35. That just as Zion, right, is a literal mountain where Israel once dwelt, and its name is used metaphorically to represent the children of Israel, wherever they go in promise.
Right, yeah, and especially the government of the children of Israel.
Well right.
Yeah.
And I would say that Seir is also the name of a literal mountain
right.
where
it's
the Edomites once
exactly,
dwelt.
Exactly, right. Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And its name is used metaphorically to describe the descendants of Esau here.
Right. Well, Esau, when he married the two Canaanite women, he went to dwell with Seir. Wasn't Seir the name of his father-in-law?
Well, he went to dwell on Mount Horus, right? He went to dwell on Mount Horus, and Seir is actually a Hebrew word that means rough.
Rough.
And it's
okay.
the same Hebrew word that the Greek word Satyr comes
okay.
from.
Okay.
Okay.
They just
and the Roman word Saturn.
Right.
Okay. And it's not that the T is dropped. What it is that if you look at Seir in the Hebrew language in Strong's Concordance, right?
Yeah.
In between the E and the I, as we spell it, is that rough apostrophe type of character that we find in the Hebrew.
A jot or a tittle. It's either a jot or a tittle.
Yeah, there's an I in. And it's just expresses an apostrophe, and it's a very guttural sound.
Okay.
That's not really represented by any particular
letter
in
yes.
English.
Right.
But the easiest way, I think, to transliterate that in the Greek would be just to put a T in it, right?
Yes.
So you end up with satyr,
right?
Instead of seer.
Okay.
And that's the word that satyr and the word that the Roman word Saturn, both I can demonstrate, come from that word.
Okay.
And it's actually the first paper I ever wrote on the Bible and never published it.
Oh, interesting.
And it's in my prison notes somewhere.
Okay, buried in a box.
Well it's, I actually ask if Esau was the first satyr.
Uh-huh, okay.
Because of the connection with seer, right?
Right.
And it's just a conjecture, but it puts all those things together. And it's,
well, it is
interesting.
Yeah, because certainly the Canaanites, Joshua of the Old Testament was commanded by Yahweh to exterminate. Those were hybrids. Many of those were hybrids of all different things, you know. And the book of Jasher talks about, you know, I think it talks about the centaurs still being in the land. Okay, so these hybrid creatures that we're talking about were probably real. Okay. Satyrs and centaurs and what have you, because
they were at least that they may have been an embellishment by the early Greeks and the early Hebrews because of the fallen angel stories, which tell us what they believed of those stories, that men had mixed their genes with animals.
Right. And about a year ago, I circulated a photograph of a goat. It did not live, or if it did live, it didn't live very long. A goat with a human face, okay? And this came from Turkey. So some farmer had mated with a goat or a sheep, okay?
Well, you know, the Greeks get blamed for that.
Right.
That's not deserved.
Right?
They don't deserve that. It's not the Greeks. It's the Turks.
Right.
In Greece that okay. Really should be the ones that,
yeah,
that bear that blame.
Yeah, and so it actually came to term and was born, so there was mixed DNA. There was mixed DNA in this creature, which would be the type of hybrid. Now, let's go back. Remember, these are fallen angels. They would have had, possibly anyway, the intelligence to breed some of these things to term. They would have probably known how to do that, okay? So it wasn't just having sex with all different kinds of animals, but they were probably experimenting with, new species, just as the Jews are doing today in laboratories, right?
Well, absolutely.
They're doing that again.
I see that as an extension of the same ongoing process.
That's
of
right.
History,
that's
that
right.
The Jew, being a bastard, wants to continue to destroy the creation of Yahweh.
That's right.
And today, he is, with our technology, he has really stepped that up.
That's right. That's right.
Now, let me give a little background on a seer. You know, Esau went to Mount Horus, or Mount Hor,
okay,
to dwell in Genesis. And the Horites are famous in archaeology, but they're not mentioned in the Bible.
Okay.
And that's because in the Bible they're Hivites.
Okay.
We don't see I'm going to double check. I don't know if we see Horite at all in the Bible.
I'm sure it is.
Genesis 6:20, seer the Horite,
okay,
right? But we also, and three times Horites are mentioned, the Dukes of the Horites.
Okay.
Now, to archaeologists, they're called Hurrians.
Okay.
And it's really the same word. One group of writers, the biblical writers, put an I-T-E on the end of it.
Right.
And the secular or profane archaeologists put an I-A-N at the end of it. But Hurrians are the Horites.
Okay.
Now, the word Hivite is actually almost certainly a error by the Masoretes for the word Horite.
Okay.
That wherever it says Hivite in the early scriptures, it should say Horite.
Okay. Okay.
And they are a branch of the Canaanites, and that's where Esau went to dwell.
Uh-huh. Okay. Or now, what would be the etymology? Why would the Horite be changed to Hivite or Hivite?
It's an error. All of the vowels are added later, right? There's
okay,
no vowel
yes.
in the original, right? Well, if you take a look at the Vav and the Rosh, which are the V and the R, right?
Yes.
It's very easy to confuse a Vav and a Rosh.
In the
because a Rosh
Hebrew.
had the letters are shaped the exact same way, except that the top part of the Rosh is a little longer.
Okay.
And they're very easy to confuse.
Okay. All right. So the scribal error, and was that the same scribal error in Deuteronomy 23:7, where thou shalt not abhor an Edomite?
No, it's different because there the Rosh and the D, the Dallas, they were confused.
Okay.
Where the Rosh and the D, they're the same exact shape, and they're even closer than the Rosh and the Vav, but they the Dallas is the D is a little squarer on the top.
Yeah,
And that's really it's all the bastardization of the alphabet that happened after the time of Ezra and Nehemiah,
right?
Or sometime just before the time of Christ when that square block Hebrew was contrived, and several of the letters can be easily confused with it.
Right, right.
I almost think the Edomites did it on purpose so that they could become Aramaeans.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, so they could make false translations, too. That's probably why they came up with their own alphabet, dropping the Paleo-Hebrew for their square-shaped, quote-unquote, Hebrew. It's not really Hebrew. It's Jubrew. Okay. All right, anything else before we get into 35?
Well, no, just that bear in mind that I believe that the word seer is used of the Edomites much the same the word Zion is used of the Israelites.
Right, exactly. Okay, very good. All right, chapter 35, verse 1. Moreover, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, set your face against Mount Seir, and we're talking about the Edomite, Canaanite, Kenite Jews here. That's who we're talking about. And prophesy against it, and say to it, Thus says Yahweh Elohim, Behold, O Mount Seir, I am against you, and I will stretch out my hand against you, and I will make you most desolate. Now, of course, there were, let's talk about Romans 16:20 real quick. There was a partial fulfillment of Genesis, I believe it was Genesis 3:16, where the 3:14, one of those two, prophesied a major devastation of the Kenite seed line, okay? And that occurred in 70 A.D. when the Roman Israelites, and this was prophesied by Paul in Romans 16:20, kicked Jew butt.
Well, right, and that, Paul... This proves that Paul is a prophet, by the way.
That's right.
Without doubt, anybody that doubts that Paul is
prophet
inspired by Yahweh is a fool.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that Paul could have known these things unless he were inspired by God. Because the entire – let's put it this way. In the Dead Sea Scrolls, and these are written by people that are zealous for their religion – but don't have a whole lot of knowledge about history.
Yes.
And the Dead Sea Scrolls see the Roman Empire as the Empire of Kittim,
okay?
Where Paul understood that the Romans had to be Dara Judah, and therefore the people of the prince, who is Yahshua Christ, in Daniel chapter 9.
Yes.
Paul understood that the people of the prince were God's people, Israelites, who would come and destroy Jerusalem sometime after the crucifixion.
Right, right.
Paul tells the Romans that God will crush the serpent under your feet shortly.
Yes.
And that happened.
Very shortly afterwards.
Maybe, probably about 14 years after Paul wrote it.
Right,
okay?
Right.
Because he probably wrote Romans in 56 A.D. or thereabouts. And in 70 A.D., the serpent, or the Edomite Jews, were crushed under the feet of the Romans.
Right, and the feet of the Romans were Israelite feet, okay? And if not Israelite, there were plenty of, I should say, two kinds of Israelites. There were Israelites who were under the cloud and the Israelites who weren't under the cloud. Namely, the ones who were at Sinai were the ones under the cloud. And then the ones who weren't under a cloud had left Egypt before the Exodus. And those were the ones who were grafted in.
Well, they had to be because they didn't have the Law and the Prophets, and they weren't a part of that marriage ceremony at Sinai.
That's right.
But they were nevertheless Israelites covered under the promises and covenants
through
Abraham and Jacob.
Yes. Now, the long-term prophecy would be toward the judgment day, And on our Sunday shows with regard to the testaments of the 12 patriarchs, Greg and I have been quoting from the various apocryphal literature that the Edomites are going to be utterly destroyed. Okay?
Well, that's Zechariah 14:21 and Obadiah and Malachi all talk about.
That's right. And I will make you most desolate. Okay? But the ultimate desolation, the ultimate judgment of these Kenite, Edomite Jews has not happened yet because they're still with us. So we're reserving this for the second coming, folks. This is going to be a very great day when evil will finally be torn away, torn out of our midst, and it will no longer exist. Verse 4, I will lay, it's speaking again to the Edomites, the Canaanite, Kenite, Edomite Jews. I will lay your cities waste, and you shall be desolate, and you shall know that I am Yahweh, because you have had a perpetual hatred and have shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword in the time of their calamity, in the time that their iniquity had an end. So in good times and in bad times for us, true Israelites, the Jews have always made war against us, if not directly, by hiring mercenary armies and by pitting one Israelite nation against another. Okay, and in olden times, it was the Amalekites who stood in the way of the Israelites when they were coming from the Exodus and wandering in the desert for 40 years. And the Edomites were always standing in our way, trying to destroy us, as they are still doing today. Verse 6, therefore, as I live, says Yahweh Elohim, I will prepare you to blood, and blood shall pursue you, since you have not hated blood, even blood shall pursue you. Okay, so the violence of bloodshed will pursue them. Now you can say that even in the Israeli state, this bloodshed is pursuing them, but they're still the authors of it. They're still the aggressors. The day is coming when they will be the pursued, okay? They will be the ones being pursued. Verse 7, thus will I make Mount Seir most desolate and cut off from it him that passes out and him that returns. Who are these people? They're the Edomite, Canaanite, Kenite, Jewish people. That's who these are. That's who we're talking about. Verse 8, and I will fill his mountains with its slain men. In your hills and in your valleys and in all your rivers shall they fall that are slain with the sword. Now, of course, the Jews don't do that much fighting themselves. They prefer to hire mercenaries and have different nations fight amongst themselves while they reap the profits. But that's only going to change at the judgment day, folks. Verse 9, I will make you a perpetual desolation, and your cities shall not return, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. Now, of course, the Jews have, I don't know to what extent they actually had cities in the area of Seir.
Well, there were several, but they weren't. Like we think of a city.
Right. And wasn't Jericho one of their cities originally, too? Wasn't that a Canaanite
Jericho
city?
Jericho was definitely a Kenite city, I believe.
Right, okay. So they are capable, and Cain built the city when he was kicked out of the garden, okay? So they have the rudimentary knowledge. If they can build, but they haven't done that in a long, long time because the builder race, the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, and Caucasian people, have done all the building since the days of, you can go back at least 3,000-4,000 years. It's our
people. Well, the Mount Seir is almost assuredly Petra.
Okay.
Known as Petra today. And it's actually a very narrow valley, which is surrounded by mountains and can only be gained, you can only get there through a very narrow pass.
Mm-hmm.
So it made it very easy to defend. And there aren't any real buildings, as we know, inside, but there are these huge edifices with intricate carvings that look like buildings, but they're really carvings into these mountains, and
uh-huh.
they're really caves.
Right.
And it's a pretty amazing. I've seen a lot of pictures of it. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. They actually filmed it in one of the Indiana Jones movies. Well,
right,
and
E. Raymond Katz has a whole book about it, and there's a lot of archaeological treatises and papers on it.
Right, right, okay. So continuing here with the judgment of Mount Seir, because you have said, these two nations and these two countries shall be mine, and we will possess it, whereas Yahweh was there. Which two nations?
Well, right. It has to be Israel and Judah.
That's right.
I got some notes before we proceed.
Okay.
We see that the literal Mount Seir, it actually has been desolate and sparsely inhabited
mm-hmm.
now for many centuries, having
right.
become desert, right? It's really only inhabited by the Bedouin Arabs. And rather, that yet the Edomites as a people, they've never been exterminated.
That's right.
Except
yeah.
for the time at Jerusalem, where according mm-hmm. to Joseph, 1.1 million of them were slain at Jerusalem. But that was probably a mixed Edomite and apostate Judahite population. A great number of the Edomites dispersed to the so-called Arab countries in an early time.
Mm-hmm.
And a great number also became Judeans, as we'll see in the verses that follow. But the references of the Edomites spilling the blood of Israel, are really replete in the Old Testament. Well, we have stories such as the Amalekites who made war with the Israelites, and they were Edomites. Amalek was one of the princes of Edom, and Yahweh said that he would make war with Amalek from generation to generation. And that has to still be going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have the instances where Doug the Edomite slayed the priest of Yahweh for Saul. But we also have two accounts, one in Psalm 136 and one in 1 Esdras chapter 4,
mm-hmm.
that the Edomites actually helped the Babylonians destroy the temple at Jerusalem.
Right.
Evidently so that they could take it for booty and take this land.
Right.
Being the allies of the Babylonians at the destruction of Jerusalem.
Right, right.
And I believe that we have in Jacob and Esau a story of which we see the type in that of Cain and Abel.
Mm-hmm.
That the bastard children are always trying to eliminate the true.
That's right.
Esau, being a fornicator, all of his children are bastards.
Right.
And the difference is that Yahweh himself has promised that we would be preserved, that we wouldn't suffer the fate that Abel suffered,
yes.
right?
Yes, yes. Well, I believe it's in Second Esdras, the prophecy saying that Edom, or Esau, is the end of this current world order, and Jacob will be the beginning of the next.
Well, right, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The rule of Satan and the descendants of Cain over this world are going to end with
yes,
this.
But they do rule this age. There's no doubt about that. They do rule this age. The house of Rothschild and Mystery Babylon, and it's amazing to me, Bill, how few Christians are able to see it. They think everything
it's
is just fine.
Out, right? It's spelled out literally in the New Testament.
That's right,
and
it is.
And they still love this world, and they still refuse to see it.
That's right. They refuse to see, because they're false priests from the chapter 34 have made them believe that they're already in heaven. Right?
Well, right, because they're following
yeah.
they're following Bullinger and that other clown, and
yeah.
I can
Schofield.
Never remember his name, Schofield.
Right.
And the people that finance them.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Okay. Verse 11. Therefore, as I live, says Yahweh Elohim, I will even do according to your anger, and according to your envy, which you have used out of your own hatred against them, that is, against Israel and Judah. And I will make myself known among them when I have judged you.
Now, since Esau took over Israel and Judah in the 5th century B.C.,
mm-hmm.
they have not suffered this fate.
That's right.
That little bit against Jerusalem with the Romans, that really precipitated their infiltration of us even to an even
right, on a worldwide
degree.
Scale, of course. I like to put it this way. Ever since Genesis 3:15, the Jews have been following us around, biting at our heels, right?
Well, right, but in Luke chapter, I think it's chapter 20, Christ spells out that the dispersion of the people, that because they didn't, because they rejected him, that they would be taken into all nations and given over to the sword and taken captive into all the nations. That was the dispersion of the enemies of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the dispersion of Israel.
Okay.
He makes that very clear, and all of these Judeo pastors miss that.
Right, right. And they know nothing or refuse to consider the original, you know, casting out or exiling of the 10 lost tribes.
Well right, which happened 600, 700 years before that.
Right, they never even consider that.
Now, I don't know how they could read this Ezekiel 35, 10, and 11. I don't know how anybody could ever read this and imagine that the people of Judea are Israelites.
No, that's right.
Because this very clearly states that the Edomites took possession of Israel and Judah.
Right.
As soon as all of the Israelites and Judahites
were taken into
captivity.
Yeah, no, this is the prophecy that
captivity.
This would occur.
Well, right. And it makes it state that it, you know, this isn't a prophecy that's ambiguous.
No, it's not ambiguous at all.
It definitely will occur.
Right.
And we have the people of Judah that returned from Babylon, they only dwelt in the little region of Galilee, north of Judea, and in and around Jerusalem.
Okay. Well, you mean Samaria, don't you? The Babylonian Canaanites,
I'm talking about the legitimate people that returned
from
Babylon.
Yeah.
That they never inhabited all of Israel and Judah again.
No, they never.
Inhabited, the Edomites did, as this states.
Right.
And they only inhabited this little region around Galilee.
Right.
And the city of Jerusalem and its immediate surroundings.
Right.
And the Edomites had become a very large nation inhabiting the former lands of Israel and Judah,
right,
as it tells us here.
Right.
And this is why Paul, in chapter 9 in Romans, explains that those vessels of destruction who are opposed to the gospel, they're Edomites.
That's right.
And Paul says that because the history of Josephus is true.
Yes.
That the Edomite peoples did indeed inhabit much of Judea, and the Maccabees had forced them into the religion of Judea when they rose to power, and that's 130 years before Christ was born.
Well, by Maccabees, because my understanding, it wasn't really until John Hyrcanus himself.
Well, right. He was very late in the reign of the Maccabees,
but
Maccabees rose to power in around 155, right after Syria had spoiled the temple.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't Judas Maccabeus or any of his sons.
Well, right. It was one of his descendants, though.
Right, right. Yes.
Now, it was John Hyrcanus who was a Maccabee. He was one of the Hasmonean dynasty.
Yes,
and
yes.
He forced all these Edomites into what can only be called by this time as Judaism, which is the religion of Judea.
Right.
It wasn't yet, you know, it had already began to depart from the true Hebrew religion of the ancients, and we could see that departing just by the fact that they thought that they should convert Edomites.
Yeah, right.
That it couldn't have possibly been Hebrewism they were practicing.
Right. No. Well, there was still Hebrewism or Mosaism being practiced among the Israelites of Judea, but we also had false priests.
Right. It wasn't. It certainly wasn't being practiced by the government
and
the high priest,
right,
because John Hyrcanus was the high priest.
Yes.
And a true high priest would have never been able to do that.
Right, and it's a direct violation of Deuteronomy 7:6, where it says, make no covenants with Canaanites. Okay?
Well, right, and
that's
also that
did.
An Edomite would never enter into the congregation.
Right, right.
And they brought them all into the congregation in 130 B.C.
Yes, in one fell swoop, exactly. And for him, it was a military decision. Because Yes.
But yeah, that still doesn't make it legitimate.
That's right.
Or lawful.
And the same thing applies in the prophecies of Jeremiah, and I think Ezekiel says it too, that the Israelites of Judea should not make leagues with the Egyptians. Okay? We're not to make leagues with non-Israelite people.
Well, right, because they don't have the moral values imparted to us by our God.
Yeah, and also that means we don't trust Yahweh to protect us. If we obey his law, he will protect us. If we defy him, he will not protect us.
Right.
That's the way it works.
Making leagues with his enemies, white or not, is defying.
Yes, exactly, exactly. If he says not to make a league with that nation, we don't make a league with that nation, period. Okay?
Well, this presence of Edomites alone, as Paul explains, and this is the reason for all of the division in the New Testament at the time of Christ.
Right.
It's very clear once you can put the history and the scripture together.
Yes.
And it's the very reason for the Jewish opposition to and hatred for Christianity ever since.
That's right.
This is those who say they are Judeans.
And
they
are not.
And they're the synagogue of Satan, the adversary.
Yes, yes. And that word Judean in the Greek is Judeos, and it simply means a citizen of Judea. Now, who did did John Hyrcanus make citizens of Judea?
Well, they were Edomites.
Edomites, exactly.
And Joseph says very, very straightforwardly, hereafter they were considered none other but Judean.
Right, right. And, of course, that's translated as Jew. All of the translators use the word Jew.
Well, right. Wiston used the word Jew also.
Yes.
But that's not what Josephus's Greek says.
That's right.
I have to distinguish between Jew and Judean.
Right.
Because in the first century, Eudahios did not mean Jew as we use the term today.
Right, yeah. All Jews are Mongols. They were already Mongols then. But they were also citizens of Judea, and that only for a period of 120 years at most, from the forced conversion under John Hyrcanus until 70 AD.
Well, that's actually
maybe
about 195 years.
I was just going to say maybe 200 years at the most. These Edomites were citizens of Judea. Okay, and now America is a little more than 200 years, and the same thing is happening to us, folks. The Edomites have taken total control of our country, okay? So let me read
let me say real quick,
okay.
Yeah, you know, John Hyrcanus brings the Edomites into Judea and has them all circumcised. Let's call it 130 BC. It may have been 125. It don't matter.
Yeah.
But by 40 BC, Herod had become the de facto king.
That's right.
80 years later.
Yeah.
And Herod the Edomite had taken over the kingdom.
Yes. That's what happens when we make alliances with Edomites. That's what happens. They take over our country. It's true for John Hyrcanus, and it's true for America. It's true for every Israelite nation that ever existed.
And these are the descendants of the man whom Paul called a fornicator.
Right.
Who despised his birthright.
Yes.
These are the brethren and the descendants of Amalek, whom Yahweh said he would make war with from generation to generation.
Right.
These people are the Jews of today.
Right.
They're the people that Paul called the vessels of destruction in Romans chapter 9.
Right. Now, of course, the Jews accuse the Palestinians of being Amalek, right? And they're always trying to throw off their own true identity by calling other people names, right?
Well, right. But, you know, the sad truth is that many of the Palestinians are Amalek.
Yes, yeah, right.
They just weren't converted to Judaism.
Right. there's Jewish Amalekites and there's Islamic Amalekites, right? And Edomites too, because because the Arabs are part Edomites. They are.
And the Jews are part Arab.
That's right.
The Jews
exactly.
Are part, part Ishmaelite, but they're also part Arab.
They just have different religions.
They're all Canaanites. They're,
right.
They're all descended from the same. Yeah, you
right.
know, there's sheep and there's goats. There's two races. That's it.
Yeah. Now, I do want to bring into discussion before we go into verse 12, and I'm going to back up and read 10 and 11 again. But the nation of Samaria has to be discussed here too, because when the Assyrians took away the 10 tribes, initially took away the 10 tribes, they put into the vacated land various different nations, and among those different nations were the Sepharvaim of Babylonia, okay, and also certainly some Edomites from Edom moved into the vacated land, as we've just been discussing. But Samaria was always a separate nation from Edom, okay, and because it was this mixed culture of Edomites, Babylonians, and whatever the Assyrians decided to move into the land. And then by the time the Judahites and Benjamites and Levites from the Babylonian captivity moved back, they were apparently unable to move the Samaritans out of that territory. So the Judahites took Jerusalem, and the Benjamites took Galilee, as you just mentioned. But in between was Samaria, a non-Israelite country, right?
And well, right, but the Assyrians took a lot. Most of those people were Adamic.
Right, okay.
There's no doubt that there were some Israelites left after the deportations by the Assyrians.
Right, right. Okay.
It can definitely be established there were Israelites left in the land,
yeah.
In Samaria even. But there were also Elamites, people from Susa, who were basically Elamites. They're Persians also.
Mm-hmm.
Babylonians, and then there's a whole bunch of people, Dinahites, Afarsifkites, Tarpalites,
right.
Aphrasites, Arkavites, Dehavites.
Yeah, it seems like the leftovers of the 10-tribe, Canaanite nation.
All of those people are people that were brought in by the Assyrians.
Okay.
But if you look at the and a lot of them can't be identified, right?
Right, right.
From their names, because we just have the records are too sparse.
Right.
However, I would say that if you look at the regions that Assyria conquered and the people they had trouble with, you'll find that they really only conquered people from the Adamic Oikoumene.
Okay.
And just because the names are lost doesn't mean that they weren't Adamites.
Mm-hmm.
However, you did have the Sepharvaim,
mm-hmm.
and a whole lot of Edomites and other Canaanites who were never removed from the land and remained there.
Right.
Who were the slaves of the Israelites at one
right.
time.
Right. Yeah, and therefore Samaria was a mixed up nation. It was kind of like New York City.
well, yes,
right?
It was. It was. I would like it to New Jersey
hodgepodge.
In a minute.
Yes.
But there was the woman at the well in John 4. It's without doubt, according to the scripture, that she
yeah.
was an Israelite.
Right.
And there were definitely
Samaria.
Some Israelites living in Samaria. However, it's fully evident that the people of Judah, of Jerusalem,
mm-hmm.
who claimed to be of Judah, and most of them probably were.
Most of them were, yeah.
And they despised the Samaritans because they had their genealogies until the time of Herod, and the Samaritans didn't.
Yes. Right, right. And I would think, too, and Josephus also records that the women of Judah staged almost daily demonstrations against Herod because they refused to accept him as king of Judah because they knew he was an Edomite. Okay? And this type of knowledge you don't get from anywhere else. Okay? So there's no way that Josephus could have been against Judah. Otherwise, he wouldn't report this kind of thing.
Well,
right?
Well, Josephus was definitely a Levite and a nobleman, even if he had the education that was imparted to the Pharisees that we know is in error.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Okay, so I think we're setting the stage of how the nation of Judah was compromised, and this is all being prophesied here in chapters 35 and 36. It even gets better, folks. Let me go back up to verse 10, leading up to verse 12 here, because you have said, these two nations, being Israel and Judah, and these two countries shall be mine, and we will possess it, whereas Yahweh was there.
Was there.
Was there,
and
yes.
And that proves that those two nations are Israel and Judah, right?
Right, exactly.
They're not talking about...
yeah, he was with us, right? He was with both houses, exactly. Verse 11, therefore, as I live, says Yahweh Elohim, I will even do according to your anger and according to your envy, which you have used out of your hatred against them, and which nation has always hated true Israel. Okay? And I will make myself known among them when I have judged you. Okay? So it appears that most of our modern-day Israelites will not understand what's going on until he judges these Edomites.
Well, like I always say, he's a lot of Judeo-Christians are going to despise their own God.
That's right.
For what he did to his alleged people.
Right. Right, exactly.
How dare you do that to your people?
Yeah, right. Yeah, so Jesus is an anti-Semite, right? Verse 12. And you shall know that I am Yahweh, and that I have heard all your blasphemies. He's talking about the Talmudic Jews here, folks. Which you have spoken against the mountains of Israel, his people, you and me, saying, They are laid desolate. They are given us to consume. Now, doesn't the Bible, I'm sorry, not the Bible.
The Talmud.
Right, you're reading my mind. The Talmud say that we are the property of the Jew.
Well, we're their prey. We are their property. We're cattle.
That's right.
And they have every right to own us.
That's right. That's what their Talmud says. Verse 13. Thus, with your mouth, you have boasted against me and have multiplied your words against me. I have heard them. What does their Talmud say? That even God asks the advice of a rabbi before making a decision. Can you believe this?
That's the arrogance of the Masoretes. Is incredible.
That's right. Total arrogance. Total arrogance. Okay? Verse 14. Thus says Yahweh Elohim, when the whole earth rejoices, I will make you desolate. That'll be reason for rejoicing. Verse 15. As you did rejoice at the inheritance of the house of Israel, because it was desolate, so will I do to you. You shall be desolate, O Mount Seir, and all, here's the bottom line, folks, all Idumea, Edom land, folks, the land of the Edomites, even all of it, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. And we talked about the partial fulfillment of the destruction of the Edomites, you know, in 70 AD, but this is going to be a worldwide judgment of the Edomites, folks. That's coming up at the judgment day. Now, anything more from chapter 35, Bill, before I continue into 36?
Well, you know, that rejoicing by the Edomites is reflected in Psalm 136, where the Edomites actually rejoiced over the destruction of the temple.
Uh-huh, right.
And Psalm 136.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm scurrying to find it now, but I can't.
Well, as you're looking for that, it's really obvious to me that throughout the history of the kingdom under David, Solomon, etc., the Edomites were being employed as scribes. Okay, and they were also being held as slaves to do menial work in the temple and, you know, in Jerusalem, etc.
Well, look at the days of King Saul. Saul was looking for, he didn't like what the priests of Yahweh were telling him, and
right.
He wanted somebody to kill him, and nobody would step up to do it except who? Doeg,
yeah.
The Edomite.
The Edomite, exactly.
In Psalm 136, that's in the Septuagint numbering. It's one off in the King James, right?
Okay.
137 in the King James. And in Psalm 136, verse 7 in the Septuagint, it says, remember, O Lord, the children of Edom,
mm-hmm.
in the day of Jerusalem, and this is not one of David's sons, right? Who said, raise it, even to its foundations.
Yes.
In other words, they were rejoicing over the destruction
right.
of the temple.
Right.
So that they could build their own 400 years later. Because,
yes.
the temple of Herod wasn't Zerubbabel's temple. It was a temple completely rebuilt by Herod.
Right.
That was the third temple.
Yes.
You can't count that as a second temple.
Right. Yeah, well, of course, the Edomites don't want people to know that there's an Edomite temple, right?
Well,
they have
right.
to
it
pretend it's an Israelite temple.
It was an Edomite temple, regardless of how beautiful. I mean, I'm sure a lot
yeah.
of Israelite craftsmen worked on it, but they worked on it under the employ of the
right.
Edomite king, and that technically was. A lot of these false prophets of today say, when the Jews build the third temple in Jerusalem.
Yes.
Well, the third temple's come and gone, and the only temple that matters now is the temple that Yahshua Christ himself raised.
Right, and that's not a temple of brick, mortar, and stone.
Right.
It's our temples we're talking about, our body, our physical being. That's what that prophecy's about. It's not about a brick and mortar church or temple. So now these Edomites that were in the employ of David, Solomon, and many of the other kings were privy to a lot of Israelite knowledge, Israelite history, because they were being employed as scribes. Okay, the Nethinim. Some of these were Nethinim, who were record keepers. Okay, and also temple workers. Some of these people were Edomites, and I'm sure that as these Edomites were studying our own literature, they began to hatch a plot, saying, well, it would be nice if someday we could pretend to be Israel, okay? And because why? because the prophecy of Isaac states that one day Esau would get the upper hand over his brother Jacob, and for a short time he would have the upper hand of his brother Jacob. Okay? Now, there was this was true during the days of Herod, okay? But then the Roman army put an end to that, and it also happened again in 1815. I know you have a slightly different take on it, but the period in which Satan was bound for 1,000 years, okay, and then was finally let loose again after those 1,000 years, and then the prophecy says that he would have not dominion. What's the terminology? He would go out and deceive the world for a little season.
Well, right, and we're living in that time.
We're in that time. This is the little season of the Mystery Babylon era of the Edomites.
Well, right, and you know, everything in prophecy, all the long-term prophecies represent things that would happen gradually.
Yeah.
And we won't even know that they're happening until it's done.
Right.
And my take on Satan being bound in the pit is from the time that Theodosius II passed the final edicts against the Jews that basically disenfranchised them in Christendom.
Right.
And it disenfranchised them in Christendom until the De Medicis had gotten their way into the papacy and passed laws which basically allowed the Jews back into Christendom.
Uh-huh. Okay. It permitted money lending again.
You know, they changed the meaning of the word usury.
Okay. Okay.
And that effectually permitted money lending. Right.
Yeah.
But that empowered Satan to climb out of the pit.
Right.
Okay? That's what empowered. And that was 1,000 years after Theodosius.
Okay.
However, there's no doubt that with the French Revolution, that Esau is full blast. I mean,
right.
We've been run by the Edomites since then.
Right. And it also fulfills the prophecy in Revelation chapter 12, where the great dragon would seek to devour the child before it was born, okay? And that child being born is America, 1776 A.D., July
4th. Well, right, this country was born in struggle, and it's always been in that struggle.
And Satan was trying to devour America. Why? The Illuminati was formed May 1st, 1776, and who do you think controlled the Bank of England? And George III, trying to prevent America from being born. Okay? So all of these prophecies fit perfectly that America is the promised land, the promised land of the end times. However, we still have to endure this little season. So this little season of the Jews controlling the world through their empire of usury, America was founded in direct opposition to that.
Well, I believe America, the best, and I don't think I covered it when we did the program on that because I didn't even really remember it at the time. But Micah chapter 6 is basically the best America chapter.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about that when we get to the minor prophets.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, we can bring that up on 10:10:10 as well. Okay, and since we only have about 5 minutes left, let's save chapter 36 for next week. And we might as well just announce that on 10:10:10, we're going to be doing our third annual 12-hour radio marathon.
Well, you're third.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, there's other people who've been
I wasn't around on 888. I was in
You were here post. For 999, right? And so, but this for us, for TalkShoe, this will be our third. And this time the theme is going to be America, that America is a biblical nation, okay? It's the fulfillment of many prophecies in the Old Testament. And even though there are people who want to bash America as not being the sufficient fulfillment of God's kingdom here on earth, which obviously we are not because there's still Jews with us, right? But if it weren't for the fact that the Jews had infiltrated our nation starting in the 1890s and had started infiltrating and subverting all of our institutions, we'd still be as prosperous as we were for the first 100 years. We would not have the Federal Reserve Bank. We wouldn't have all these Jewish institutions, Jewish education, Jewish entertainment, Jewish gambling, Jewish stock market, et cetera, et cetera. We wouldn't have any of that.
And we just take the Arabs' oil.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, and they'd be glad to sell it to us. Right? It'd be cheaper to buy it.
Buy it. They wouldn't. They have no use for it. Camels don't run on oil.
Well, they do now. They have gold-plated Cadillacs. Right. So we're going to discuss the America. Yes, Commander McGregg. America is the new Jerusalem. USA in the middle of the word Jerusalem, folks. And we're going to be documenting the fact that America is a biblical Christian nation. So please join us for that. It's going to be that's a Sunday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on October 10th, 2010. So please join us as we pray, because unless we pray and ask Yahweh for this, he's not going to give it to us. So we have to make the call. If we don't make the call, he's not going to answer it. And so in addition to asking Yahweh to rid this nation of these parasites, also we're going to ask Yahweh to awaken the rest of the Israelite nation so that the scales fall off their eyes and they see what's really happening in this country and why, okay? And as we pray for that, and whenever we, true Israelites, pray for these things, Yahweh responds. He will respond, okay? So please join us. And the more of us that participate, and if you can fast for that day, I ask that you fast. If not, if you're not used to fasting, just join us in prayer and join us in whatever capacity you can, okay? So that pretty much concludes the show. Do you have any final comments here on chapter 35 leading into 36?
Well, it might seem desolate right now, but it gets better. There's some hope at the end of this. There's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, well, yeah, because Yahweh promises in many, many places that these parasites, he will make, it's like the house is infested with parasites, folks, and the exterminator.
Well, there's no doubt. And if anybody ever wants to argue about the identity of the Jews, just take them to Ezekiel 34 and Ezekiel 35.
Yeah, and 36.
With Ezekiel 34, we know that these Jews aren't the sheep.
Right.
They can't possibly be the sheep. And with Ezekiel 35 and 36, we see who they are.
Right.
They're the Edomites. They're the people of Yahweh's wrath, the vessels of destruction that Paul said they were in Romans 9.
Yes, yes. And, Gerald, let's just – I can still post the link. I forget what the – people were asking me to post the link, and I forgot what it was. I got so involved in the show. But at this point, let's end the show, and I can post the link afterwards. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's chapter 36. It gets even better. And we're going to, and then 37, 38, 39, all of these superb prophecies about Israel and Judah. Okay? We have both houses in existence. They're going to come back together. And we have the Valley of the Dry Bones, the Dry Bones coming back to life. Okay? Fantastic prophecies yet to come in the book of Ezekiel. Okay, so thank you all for listening. Thank you, Bill, for being my co-host. And see you all again next Friday. Tomorrow we're going to be continuing Second Peter, right? And
yes.
Probably going into Jude as well. Okay?
Praise
all right. Praise God.